When we think of the internet, all this comes to mind. And yes, it is amazing technology. But we also have images in our mind, which we have obtained from what we have said in school since we were children. We have seen them on television or in movies. When we talk about telecommunications, we also think about this. But how close to reality are those images? How is the whole world connected to the internet? Are there satellites floating up there? First, we have to know how telecommunications and the internet work globally. The reality, and it can be verified, is that all the countries in the different continents are connected to the internet through fiber optic submarine cables. That's right, with cables. While most of us now experience the internet through Wi-Fi and phone data plans, those systems eventually connect with physical cables that rapidly transport information across the oceans. But let's go back a bit. Countries began to connect with cables from the 19th century. The first transatlantic cable was completed in 1858 to connect the United States and Great Britain. Queen Victoria commemorated the occasion with a message to President James Buchanan, which took 16 hours to air. It was a revolutionary event that communication beyond the ocean it became possible, although the communication system was at that time the telegraph. In 1866, the transatlantic submarine cable was completed and the submarine cable networks in the world gradually expanded. In the following years, more cables were laid that connected more countries and continents to each other. In 1876, the telephone was invented and dramatically expanded as a method of communication. In 1891, the world's first submarine telephone cable was built in the English Channel. While laying a transatlantic telephone cable was seriously considered since the 1920s, the technology needed to economically viable telecommunications developed until the 1940s. In 1956, the first transoceanic cable, TAT-1, was laid. This could only carry 36 calls at a time, but it also contained a direct line from Moscow to Washington, D.C. At the beginning of the 60s, they already had the idea of being able to connect computers to each other. In 1964, the first Trans-Pacific submarine cable was built, and after that, many other Trans-Pacific undersea cables were continuously built. In 1965, two long-distance computers were connected for the first time, one in Massachusetts and one in California, via telephone line. This is how the internet was born. In 1969, the United States created a military network, called ARPANET. That at the beginning there were only four computers connected in different universities. But 2 years later they were already 40. Thus, the network of networks continued to grow, through telephone lines. At that time, transoceanic cables were coaxial cables that transmitted voice band signals, multiplexed in frequency, but the connections were very slow. Many of these cables can still be used, but they have been abandoned because their capacity is too small. Some have been used as instruments to measure seismic waves and other geomagnetic events. In the 1980s, an optical submarine cable was invented. Telecommunications with high quality and capacity became possible. The first transatlantic telephone cable to use fiber optics was the TAT-8. which became operational in 1988. It could carry 36,000 calls at a time. During the course of the 1990s, many more cables were laid. Until today, with hundreds of cables. Reflecting the increase in internet use around the world. Today, the main method for international telecommunications. It is with the use of submarine cables. Modern cables use fiber optic technology to carry digital data. They include telephone, internet and private data traffic. The reliability of submarine cables is high, especially when multiple routes are available in the event of a cable break. Furthermore, the total carrying capacity of submarine cables is terabits per second. In recent years, many submarine cable installations are growing all over the world. Since a communication infrastructure with higher speed and greater capacity is required due to the rapid growth of the internet. Cables are safer in deep water, where they can rest on a relatively flat seabed and they do not rub against rocks or risk other disturbances. The deeper the better. Closer to shore, cables are buried under the seabed for your protection, which explains why no cables are seen on the beach. But in the depths of the sea, they are placed directly on the ocean floor. This is an example of a transatlantic cable route seabed profile. There are thousands of kilometers between one coast and the other, and as can be seen, the level is always flat. Of course, with its respective relief, but no curvature is taken into account. There is no curvature, only relief. Water always maintains its level between continental masses. That is why they talk about sea level. As seen in this illustration, in 13,000 kilometers away, the ocean maintains its same level. Only the relief and depth change. All cables currently in service use fiber optic technology. In the modern era, telecommunications companies ran most of the cable. But for the last decade, the American tech giants, they began to take more control. Facebook, Google, Amazon, Apple and Microsoft, they are now building their own systems submarine cable, so they have control over the infrastructure on which they depend. Facebook and Google built one of the largest cables to connect Los Angeles and Hong Kong, called Pacific Light Cable Network. The approximately 13,000 kilometers long high-speed cable. This cable can move data at a speed of 144 terabits per second, which would make it possible to have 80 million calls simultaneous high-definition video conferencing between Hong Kong and Los Angeles. Google also built a cable between Oregon and Japan, and Facebook and Microsoft built one that connects Virginia with Spain. Currently, there are more than 1.2 million kilometer of cables connecting continents to support our demand for communication. Telecommunications operators, mobile operators, multinational corporations, governments, content providers and research institutions. They depend on submarine cables to send data around the world. Something curious is that so far there are no submarine cables between Australia and South America. Perhaps because of the great distance between these two points, the risk of placing it in those latitudes of the Pacific Ocean and also for the cost involved. But you may be wondering, what about the radio? Since it is wireless. Well, in this case its spectrum is limited, the range and spread depends on the frequency bands. That can range from a few tens of kilometers to hundreds of kilometers, or in the case of the LF and MF bands, The longest range is approximately 1,500 kilometers, depending also on the weather and terrain conditions. Electromagnetic waves do not travel indefinitely. They fade as the distance increases until they disappear. This is why repeater antennas are used, but the range also depends on the power of the transmitting and receiving antenna. And it is also well known that certain waves can bounce off the ionosphere. This means that the waves collide with layers of the ionosphere and the ionosphere reflects the waves back to another antenna. This peculiarity is used to carry out radio transmissions very long range. Since it can be calculated according to Snell's law, the angle at which it should strike the ionosphere layer to reflect the signal back to the ground and allow to reach a great distance. Land communications have been around for a long time. LORAN long-range navigation. It was developed during the Second World War, with a range of up to 2,400 kilometers, using towers at different points and islands, to provide coverage for navigation. The signal bounces off the ionosphere and reaches the next tower. Since then, incremental improvements have been made to this technology in power, range, and efficiency. Tropospheric scattering is also used. Radio waves are reflected by this layer of the atmosphere, which is the lowest portion and makes communication possible between antennas at greater distances. That is why we also see parabolic antennas oriented in a specific direction to receive the signal. This is how the so-called satellite TV also works, since they are electromagnetic waves. Remember that radio waves are a type of electromagnetic radiation, best known for its use in communication technologies such as television, mobile phones and of course the radio. So this is how streaming works on all these services that we use daily. Not with satellites in space. Television or radio services that have the word satellite. Perhaps more for an image and marketing issue, for wanting to highlight its technological part. But they work the same, with transmitting antennas, receivers and decoders. As we have already seen, today, more than 99% of international communications are carried out through fiber optic cables. The remaining 1% are transmitted by antennas, parabolic reflectors, airplanes, solar drones, towers and satellites on high-altitude balloons. Up to here and knowing this, the idea of satellites floating in space is discarded. But then do they exist? Well, those only exist in images, animations and science fiction. There is not a single real image or video of a satellite on the internet. If you search, all the images that appear are animations or compositions created by computer. Why don't mobile phones work in desolate areas like mountains, jungle, some rural areas or far from the coast? That's because cell phones rely on towers and towers triangulate their position. We already know that the range also depends on the quality and power of the receiving equipment. If it were for satellites in space, then there would be a signal anywhere on Earth and it would not be lost. The origins of satellites come from the mind of the famous science fiction writer, Arthur C. Clarke. He wrote Arthur C. Clarke's 1945 proposal for geostationary satellite communications. Then this idea continued to appear in science fiction books and later in movies, until it occurred to them to take it to the staging of reality and create satellites out of science fiction. In 1968, Stanley Kubrick made a movie of 2001 A Space Odyssey. From Clarke's novel of the same name, it is said that Kubrick was hired to make the moon landing. One could assume that 2001 A Space Odyssey was a rehearsal prior to the Apollo mission. If there are so many satellites supposedly orbiting the spherical Earth and probes they send to Mars, why are there no complete images of Antarctica? Only strange images with blank and incomplete digital parts are seen on virtual globes. How do satellites survive over 2,200 degrees Celsius in space? Satellites are supposedly located primarily in the thermosphere where temperatures can rise to those degrees. There are only 7 elements in the periodic table that could withstand this heat, and none have been used for satellites. If we look for some examples of companies that are involved in the satellite business, we can see that the majority shareholders behind these companies are the Rothschilds. And when researching other major US medias, we will realize that it is also the same or powerful elite groups that are behind and control this. But as I already mentioned, yes, there are some types of unmanned aerial platforms capable of staying in the sky for months, acting as satellites. But they work on airplanes or solar drones, which can be in the air, for example, at an altitude of 21 kilometers, circling over the same place for a month, or the satellites in stratospheric balloons that may be flying for several months at a higher altitude, between 20 and 30 kilometers, since they do not need energy to stay in the air. Depending on the type, they may need power for their motors, if they want to stay in a precise position and not drift due to winds. Even without motors, they can try to remain nearly stationary, changing their altitude to catch the winds that propel them in the right direction. As well as the tide balloons, which maintain their position. Solar-powered untethered balloons are the most useful design. All these vehicles are used for the aerial photo service that we see on maps, radars, optical observation, signal intelligence, weather and telecommunications such as internet or mobile telephony, for example, acting as cell towers 20 kilometers and providing near perfect coverage in a range of up to 200 kilometers, offering an easy and fast way of coverage for a remote or specific regions. Also in military networks, surveillance, among other applications. There are at least 18 different platforms that can be used independently or in groups to provide all these services. And they can certainly be misperceived as satellites by the public. That we have always mistakenly thought that they are floating in space, but they are not. So we could say yes, if there are devices flying in the sky that are part of it. Remember, 1% of the telecommunications technology used worldwide. The other 99% is through submarine cables. There is no point in continually risking launching satellites into space if they already exist. More profitable, reliable and easy to maintain ground systems, which is true. But they say there are more than 2,600 satellites supposedly orbiting in operation. And in total with those that no longer operate but are still floating, they are about 4,900 objects, and they say they will continue to launch even more. But in addition, there are up to 370,000 pieces of space debris flying at speeds of up to 35,000 kilometers. After seeing and understanding how telecommunications really work, we can realize and have a clear idea of what is happening in this world. And one of the most important aspects to understand it is looking at the cost of a satellite. Of those who supposedly launch into space, ranging from US $50 million to US $450 million, plus another million for launch cost, plus another million a month for monitoring it, etc., that is, a round business. Where will all that money go?